Hi, Christiana.
Hi, Kevin.
Hi, we're good to go.
Okay, perfect. So
let's start with your year of graduation, including if you finish up coursework spring, summer, fall, and your major or majors.
Okay, I graduated from the Boston Conservatory before it was the Boston Conservatory at Berkeley in May of 2015, it would have been. So I was a dance major, and I chose a ballet emphasis at that time as my declared emphasis for the dance program.
Awesome. We will get to your history later, but for now, tell us about your current job. Where do you work? What do you do?
Sure. I am currently a mental health counselor. I work for a remote private practice. So I'm currently on a limited permit, which is really just another word for a provisional license in a sense. So I graduated with a master's degree, but I currently have a provisional license to work in New York. So it's a New York-based private practice where I see clients remotely, and that practice is called Northeast Psychological Wellness.
Northeast. Okay. And I think of, because I did the high school thing very, very briefly a long time ago, that at least in Massachusetts, again, you get like a provisional license, and then after you've done it for 5 years, you get a regular license. And like, there's literally no way to get a regular license without putting in the time.
Exactly. For New York, I hope to be licensed in a year. I finished my grad school program in August of 2023, so a year basically already, which has flown. So I hope to be fully licensed in New York in 1 year. So that, and that is with completing about 3,000 hours of work. So we accrue hours as we work, but hopefully at that point, within 2 years, I'll have that full license.
So you said it was the Northeast Psychological Alliance, is that right?
Northeast Psychological Wellness.
Psychological Wellness, got it.
Yes.
All right, here, can I ask about that, your employer? So about how many, I'm sorry, you say you're a mental health counselor. How many
Yes.
counselors or people who do a similar job but might have a different title, like therapists? About how many of you therapists slash counselors work there?
Yeah, I am going to say I believe there's 20 therapists, and there within the therapists there are different credentials, let's say. So I would have a master's, there might be someone with a PhD or a PsyD. I believe there's one social worker, and then two interns. So those would be master's level students that are working as therapists. And I want to say about 20 of us on the team.
About 20. Are you all remote then?
We are all remote. Most people are in New York, but we have a couple of folks in different states, but we all would see clients that are based in New York.
And remote is that you're working from your home?
Yes, correct.
Cool. And let's see, I know that within psychology, of course, there are many, many, many subfields, right? That, you know, there are some people are general counselors, right? Anyone walks in
right.
homes, kind of like lawyers too, right?
Right.
They're the lawyers who handle whoever walks in the door, and then they're like, oh, we do family law, or we only do commercial real estate or something.
Yes.
So first off, the practice, Northeast Psychological Wellness, have a specialty, and then within that, do you?
That's a great question. It actually is a behavioral health private practice as a designation, and really what that means, we see a variety of mental health disorders. Behavioral therapy as a specialty meets the needs across a really wide variety for clients and their needs. So within that, we still see clients individually, couples, families. So behavioral in the sense is a bit of a broad term, but it kind of denotes that we work with evidence-based practices. So using theory, research-backed practices predominantly within this practice, as opposed to, let's say, something like psychoanalysis, for example, which is a very different type of therapy. But we still, within a behavioral practice, would see individuals that maybe have eating disorders, trauma, anger management problems, for example, almost the full spectrum of different mental health disorders, just using a certain approach.
Sure. Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And hey, by the way, you said about 20-ish counselors. How about support staff?
support staff. They're actually building it out right now. It's an amazing team. We have, I want to say, 3 support staff. One works full time. Another 2 are different days of the week. So they would do the calls with clients, the initial inquiry, and then they set us up with our clients. So they're amazing.
All right. So overwhelmingly, the actual counselors and just enough support staff to keep
yes.
it going.
Yeah.
And by the way, do you all work with adults, children, or both?
Great question. All ages are welcome at this practice. I personally work with children. My youngest client, I believe, under 10. So typically see kids no younger than 7 right now, but I do work with children, teens, adolescents, young adults. My caseload is pretty much under 30, I would say. I work with a bit of the younger population, but adults, older adults are seen at this practice as well. So really all people sure. get seen here.
And
yeah.
It sounds like you also then deal with a range of issues.
Absolutely.
You're not the eating disorder person. You're kind of lots of different.
Absolutely. And my title of a mental health counselor is in New York, that would be an LMHC. Is that credential you would see after someone's name, for example, or in my case currently MHC-LP, which denotes the limited permit role. I am open in that sense.
I yes. see people LinkedIn with the LP, yeah. and I always wondered what that meant.
Limited permit. That's a little designation that a therapist, but not fully licensed. That's the type of license. So that one is in itself open and broad, whereas, for example, someone might be an LMFT, which is licensed marriage and family therapist. So I could still see clients based on different needs. I could still work with a family, but there are different classifications of those titles. So all to say, I do work with a broad range of client needs and diagnoses right now.
Gotcha. And by the way, I don't ask people how much money they're paid, but I am curious, if you don't mind, about the structure of your pay. Like,
yeah.
Are you just like kind of pure salary? Do you get a certain percentage of what the clients billed? Is it hourly? Like,
yeah, great question, because that actually changes across the mental health field based on the setting. So in a private practice setting, I currently am fee for service. I am I don't know if this is helpful to know, I'm a W-2 employee, but I am a fee for service, whereas maybe at a outpatient community mental health center, you would have a salary, maybe another place that was out of pocket that might be a split in terms of how sessions are billed. So that is different across the board. Currently, I am fee for service, which includes clinical hours and also an administrative rate when I have meetings and that sort of thing.
Okay, that's cool. Hey, for what it's worth, a lot of faculty at Berkeley are paid that way too.
Oh, okay.
But part-time faculty, it's technically a certain amount per hour that they're teaching or doing stuff, plus department ethics. But okay, cool. And about how many hours are you in front of clients? Or on the screen with clients?
Yes. That I am now, I am just about to close my caseload. I feel I have a full caseload right now. I have currently about 30 clients, but a few of those folks are in a group of mine. So I run a therapy group one night of the week, which is 90 minutes. In addition to that, I have otherwise about 25 individual clients. So that becomes the client hours that I'm working a week. However, I might have some folks that I see every other week, for example. So minimum 20 hours of client sessions a week, I think is fair to say. So in a private practice setting, that might be more some weeks, less some weeks, based on client scheduling, if people are away. But try to average at least 20 clients a week.
Oh, no, I get that that doesn't mean you're only working 20 hours a week. Trust me, as a professor,
right.
you can try to students 12 hours a week. I get it.
Right. Everything outside of that, all the work that goes into that time with the client. But exactly, 20 client-facing hours.
Is there a lot of then documentation that you need to do?
There is. And we have to do notes every week, which is standard at at every practice, whether that's for billing, and it's also just a really good practice to get into the habit of. And I think I'm still trying to figure out how much time I can bring to that focus of documentation, but we do have notes. Since this is a remote practice, the client portal, the same way that I'm seeing clients virtually, I have access to a client portal where I would store those notes and just sign them, sign and share it. Yeah.
Cool. You mentioned that you get your full license in about a year.
Yes.
Is that typically with lawyers, before they pass the bar, they might go to work with someplace, and then as soon as they pass the bar, they get a huge pay raise. Is this the same deal, or is it more just a routine, onward?
That, it does make a difference. How much, I am not sure based on different settings, but absolutely. The limited permit to a full license, definitely you can assume that comes with a pay raise, and which is great. So that's also motivating to be out of this kind of transitional period. So that's definitely significant. And for some people, I know someone that maybe was able to complete it within a year and a half, which is amazing. I'm thinking right now, realistically for myself, based on the hours you have to accrue, I'm hoping for 2 years, but some folks that might take years to get to that point, based on various things, or if someone's doing this maybe not full time as well.
I mean, an extra 6 months in exchange for not running yourself ragged doesn't sound too bad.
Right. I'm happy to go at this pace. It feels great. I love it, but it feels sustainable as opposed to trying to rush to that point.
Can I ask you're remote. Was this just you applied for jobs and this is the place that hired you, or was there something particular about remote that you feel works well for you or works better? Curious you're taking that, because there are definitely in-person practices.
There are, and it's interesting. I don't think I ever anticipated that I would work remotely. I went to Pace in, I believe it was the fall of 2021, and even at that time, when we were registering for classes, they were telling us, don't assume this is online. This will not be an online program. And actually, my cohort, it was almost entirely online, except for about 6 weeks in the spring, one semester where I had to go in person. So basically, I learned how to do this remotely. I definitely at some point would love an in-person experience, I believe, but I absolutely love working remotely. And I came to find that with my internship, because at some point in school, you are a therapist intern in addition to still fulfilling your master's degree. So I found that just for timekeeping's sake, it was so efficient. It, I think, also really delivers a very literal boundary related to whether that's time or just putting an end to a session. Being a therapist is absolutely amazing. I am so happy I do this job. And at the same time, it really allows you to wrap up that time in a bow when you can end the call, as opposed to, let's say, having kind of the in-person exchanges going from client to client, really just one kind of leading into the other. I feel like I can put a stop in between, even just for a moment, to then give my full attention to the next person. So this was a practice that I really wanted to work for. I absolutely love it. So I was thinking about how will this feel now that I love it to do this twice as much, because I probably had about 12 clients when I was an intern remotely. So I was curious how I would feel doing this now for about minimum 20 hours of clients remotely. But so it's been really wonderful, and I think it's helped me have a nice maybe work-life balance in that way, being able to just have the call, give it my full time and attention, and then in a literal way be able to step away from it.
Gotcha. And curious, because obviously nobody in your profession sees an infinite number of clients by definition.
Right.
So something is always the limiting factor. And for some people, the limiting factor is how much they want to work. For another person, the limiting factor is how many clients they can find.
Yeah.
So I ask, what's your limiting factor?
I think I've found where I'm just, I think, now finding that for myself. For instance, my absolute cap right now for how many I can sustain a day, it's about 6 people, just as an example. So I think I'm finding just whether it's my energy that I can bring to it. So it definitely feels like more it's on my part as opposed to the client or taking on another person. I think that's where my empathy, I'm a therapist for that reason. And at the same time, if I said I was full in my caseload and I hear someone on the phone that wants to work with me, I'll probably say yes, because I want to help. So I think for myself, understanding in terms of my own energy, where I can give everything to every single person, as opposed to, you know, it's not like another kind of job that way, where that last hour I'm just there. It has to be what I'm bringing to the first person of the day. So that's where I think I'm starting to find it's a number right now, even if 6 maybe is not so different than 5. But I think finding my cap in the day let me figure out how many people I can take on total.
Got it. So in other words, this sounds like you're not particularly worried about finding more clients. That you're the limiting factor.
Yes, I feel that, and I'm really grateful for this practice, and I think that also speaks to the need, which is a very real thing. I believe the office probably is on that phone every day talking to clients that are inquiring. So I'm definitely the limiting factor there, and trying to figure out with myself maybe how that can change over time, as opposed to wanting to meet or needing in a way that I'm grateful for, needing to take on more work.
And look, you know, if at the end of the day the limiting factor is either your own, you know, sort of desires, or you know, some dearth of clients, the former is way better position to be in.
Yes, exactly. I definitely feel grateful for that and recognize it. And I think that's where, even if I'm tired or I'm realizing, wow, this is a lot, it's in a way that I welcome. I am so happy to be doing this. And it's a good feeling that, okay, there is work here and there's people to help. So I absolutely agree with that.
All right, great. And I would say, by the way, that my side job, I wrote a course for Berkeley Online that I teach a couple sections of. And once again, if I wanted to do more, I could, but no thank you.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So, oh, by the way, do you like have a supervisor?
I do have a supervisor. That's a great question, because I actually was thinking of it when I mentioned that I was under a limited permit. That's also a big distinction, that a licensed therapist does not, in a technical sense, need a supervisor. At that point, you are no longer under supervision. You can seek what's called consultation. So being that I'm under a limited permit right now, I have to see a supervisor, who is amazing. I meet with my supervisor currently once a week. When you're in grad school, it's much more than that as you're learning. Of course, I still am to some extent and always will be. But I currently work with a supervisor, and that's built into my schedule, into my hours. That is a standing appointment where I share updates on all my clients, and I'm being evaluated also in that role.
Are they watching in as you meet with clients, or is it more just like a debriefing afterward?
A debriefing after, but I do believe that's an option if ever needed to be, or maybe even just for a learning experience. In grad school, I would think that can happen more often. I have recorded a session before with the client's consent, of course. There were forms to fill out, but I have recorded a session that the client was in agreement with that was used as a tool to evaluate me in real time. Otherwise, from just really the way you talk about client cases, we have meetings every week as a staff, and then we have meetings with my supervisor, and there's notes. There's a lot of places they can gather that information from.
Gotcha. Very cool.
Yeah.
And so to qualify for these interviews, one of the criteria you have to hit is that you enjoy what you do. And I can hear it in your voice. But tell us, like, what is it about being a mental health counselor that you enjoy?
It's a great question. I believe that this is something, it feels like home for me in a way that dancing and movement absolutely did as well. And I think always will. And I think I see therapy itself as an art form, but more so the exchange of being with people in space, getting to sit in the presence of someone and witness their life story, for example, or witness change happen, or what's called an aha moment, where maybe in real time you see someone have a realization of something, or something clicks, essentially. It is such a beautiful thing to see. So this feels like a dance for me. The way that clients and I can speak, what we're doing together, it feels like it's a dance. There's movement happening, and it's a beautiful thing to see. And I think I feel most, I guess, aligned in myself as a person being a therapist. I really feel like I am connected to a place that I want to speak from and how I feel about people. And I'm hoping that's shared in exchange, and that can be something that really helps someone in their life, that someone sitting in front of them that wants the best for them and is on board and is listening. So it's been something that even throughout my life, I feel like I was, this is kind of shared when you're in grad school, that person that people went to talk. So I always thought of, oh, if in another life I would be a therapist. I would always talk about it kind of like the ship sails, and then came to find over time that, oh, I could actually do this in a very literal way. I had the ability to use my credits, but also just the pursuit of it was something that I eventually just went towards with open arms, went running. And so there was a lot to learn, but the experience of it feels like home and feels like something that I have done before in some way and always want to do.
Gotcha. Oh, by the way, that's great. Do you speak anything other than English?
I do not. I wish I did, for that reason, to even be able to offer more services to clients and be able to reach a wider demographic of people. I currently don't at this time, but that is so valuable to be able to speak another language.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah. A lot of jobs where suddenly someone being multilingual is like, wow, big plus. Oh.
Yes, especially for this with mental health, whether that's in some cultures, maybe also if mental health is not something that is typically welcomed or talked about, to have someone that you can speak the same language with in a very literal way can just reach that person in a way that is so comforting and increases their maybe comfortability to even go to therapy. So very valuable.
Gotcha. Oh, and one last thing before we move on to the next part. Is your job a typical kind of 9 to 5 hours, or do you end up doing like evenings, weekends?
Yeah, I have made it somehow to be about an 8 to 6, which I love. In private practice, it is typical to do nights only, for example, or sometimes odd hours when people are out of work, in a sense. You definitely have to have some flexibility to be able to have clients, especially if their schedule changes. But I typically see people between 8 and 6 p.m., maybe one group in the evening, maybe someone a little bit earlier. But that's generally the hours I operate.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, so let's take it back now. I was going to say to 2015, although if you feel this story has a logical earlier starting point, we could take it back further.
Sure.
But otherwise, like, put us in your headspace as things were wrapping up at BOCO. And we'll take it like one step at a time from there to where you are now, both in terms of what you were doing for a career, but also in terms of where you were at mentally in terms of your career.
Yeah. I think in a brief way, the call to help people was always present, but never something I thought of as a job. Again, I definitely thought of it as, oh, I otherwise would have been a psychologist. I otherwise would have been a therapist. So it was not something that I thought about in real terms, more so that, oh, I could probably help people, or that would have been interesting and a great job for me. But in BOCO, when I graduated, was full steam ahead. I loved to dance, still not even past tense. I loved to dance. And so at that time, I was ready to just hit the ground running, audition for everything. I think there's a website, Dance NYC, if that's still the forum.
You moved to New York.
Yes. And I will admit, I didn't go very far. I'm from New Jersey. So I was, New York was the place to go, but also wasn't so out of the way for me. But Boston to New York, moved there. I was looking at auditions every single day. And so my first job, actually a brief contract that I had, was in San Francisco. It was amazing. I was there, I want to say that August, I believe it was August 2015 until November of 2015. So I had an initial job, came back to the city, and that was
like
more
sort of publicly performed dancing.
Yes, it was a company out there called Inside Out Contemporary Ballet, and this was for basically a contract for a certain performance. So as opposed to being a full-time dance company contract, it was for a specific show, for a specific piece they were doing. So I did that, made really wonderful connections, but also knew I wanted to be back in New York, was just open to see what was out there, and I'm glad I did. So I came back, and from that point on, I met someone where I did a lot of improvisational work that was also a little bit of performance art. So where I can kind of sum up all of my dance jobs, I will say the field has, of course, changed so much, but it really was already starting to become very contract-based when I graduated, as opposed to you got the contract for this dance company for 1 year, let's say. It was very much gig work in the sense of, I got this show, or I was cast in this piece that's going to be performed in this festival, that sort of thing. So I worked consistently, which I'm grateful to say, but a lot of those kinds of jobs. And one definitely led to another. I think I definitely was really grateful to network in the city. So I was auditioning a lot, but at the same time would start to get into kind of like a text thread of, can you do this piece with us? Can you work with this person? So that started to happen really organically, which is wonderful.
By the way, could I ask, were you able to kind of support yourself on your dance income, or were you doing some side stuff?
I was doing some side jobs, but I was paid very disproportionately across those jobs, but I was happy they were all paid. But some, interestingly enough, would be very well paid. This one group that I worked with that was also a little bit of performance art, I think because it was maybe a variety of different types of art forms all in one, there was substantial backing for that, which was wonderful. And then other times it might have been a rehearsal stipend and the stipend for the show. So that's that sort of thing. So
gotcha.
a little bit unstable in that sense in terms of the dance income. So that went on, honestly, for about, in retrospect, it's a long and short amount of time. For 5 years, that was probably what I did for work as a dancer all throughout. It was just maybe different.
I'm doing some math. COVID.
And then COVID. That was the stopping point for that, which that's definitely where this came into play logistically. But to get to be a therapist, what was interesting, and I can just sum it up, that my day job was I opened a gym. I was the front desk gal at a gym in Union Square. And so I just greeted people all the time. And it was a very small members-only gym where I essentially knew everyone by name. And that became the type of thing where someone's walking out and I tell them, have a nice weekend. And they say, well, actually, I won't, because, and then they start to open up to me about what was going on with them. So I held a lot of space as a front desk manager at that time. But I wanted to be in a space where you could help people in whatever capacity I could. So at first I thought, okay, a gym, fitness, people want to be healthy. And then that eventually evolved to a wellness company in New York City that was a little bit of a workout, movement, wellness brand. So that was kind of like my next step into, okay, well, if I can't be a therapist.
The gym stuff, is this what you're saying you got after COVID, or was this like during your dance?
Oh, this was prior to get to the stopping point in COVID. This was like how I sustained myself in a way. Yes. So that once I took a wellness job, that's actually where I start to consider what I wanted to do. That was probably, I believe, 2018. I started working for this wellness company, which was about up until COVID. So I was already in that mindset of, okay, I guess maybe I could grow here. Maybe I could be a manager. Maybe I could be a director and help people by extension, but without being a therapist. I would send emails to the students, they were called at this company, and the replies I would get would be people that were really sharing how they were doing emotionally, or I'm so grateful for you. So that same theme of people in an interaction that I had in a role that was not a therapist, I was having these very therapeutic conversations with people. So I knew I wanted to do something in that field as a career, but I thought it might stop at being just someone that runs a place like that, as opposed to being in a helping profession. So still dancing, working at that job, and COVID hits. And that's where, at that point, I definitely was feeling, I think, maybe physically tired as well from dancing, and feeling really sore, maybe not recovering in the same way, or feeling a little bit of, I hate to say, dread to go to a rehearsal. I love to perform, but I was starting to not love the process, which made me really sad, because I believe that's everything. So that's, I started to just notice those cues. But then over COVID, once I stopped, I had never been in a literal way so stagnant in my life, not moving. And I was starting to think of a lot about, you know, when this is over, what do I want to do on the other side of this? What meaning do I want my life to have? And I believe as an artist that is inherent. I think arts are so meaningful. And at the same time, I think I feel like it needed to evolve into something else. So that's where I took out my computer and probably a Google search, how to become a therapist. So it was something I was toying with, the idea of, all right, how much is a master's degree, or how long is grad school? So to find that I could transfer my degree, could do it in 2 years, it just, I applied almost impulsively that I want to do this, I want to try this. So there were kind of, my other jobs set me up to do this in a way, but it really wasn't COVID until that would have ever happened.
Got it. So then, yeah, it's because you mentioned you started the program in fall of 2021. So like,
yes.
At what point did you say, I want to do this, when you started applying for school?
I guess I must have applied that spring. So spring of 2021, but I definitely recall over the course of 2020, I still had that other, the job in wellness, which I was grateful for. I was working remotely for them. The whole thing went online, but still having a sense of, this financially cannot last forever. The current rate I was making, the type of job I was doing, it was a very much still hourly role. And I think I had...
Right, by this can't last forever, you mean they were paying you too much or too little?
Too little, yeah. Okay. And yes, which was, you know, of course, I was so grateful to have a job at that point. But I think just the circumstances of COVID, maybe that reality check of, wait a minute, how am I actually going to advance myself? How am I going to grow my savings? That sort of mentality, I think I was really forced to consider those things. And I think I always had, but it made it so crucial and imperative to consider your well-being, of course, at that time, but also in these other concrete ways. So I definitely thought about it throughout 2020. And I thought of, oh, maybe I'll be a dance movement therapist, which is another type of therapist, but it's unfortunately very limiting, that type of role. So it's something that maybe in the future I would love to get a credential, which is a whole other thing to add to this. But I thought of it in that way, and then doing research, seeing the jobs, and seeing just, wait, to be a licensed mental health counselor allows me to work with anyone and everyone. And from there, maybe I can add a certain credential like that, but I didn't want to limit myself. So by the time I guess I got to that point, I would have applied in spring of 2021 to get to PACE.
Got it. And what was the exact program that you did at PACE?
It's the mental health counseling program. It's at the Pleasant...
Is it a bachelor's or a master's?
Oh, I'm sorry, a master's. It's a master's of science, and it's on the Pleasantville campus. They do have psychology as well, so even that I was considering, do I get a master's in psychology? But essentially from that route, you would have had to go for a PhD to basically use a psychology master's, because it's not the same as counseling, as being taught how to be a counselor, be a therapist for people. So it was the master's in mental health counseling program at PACE.
Gotcha. And then can we talk about that, how you go from, because this is your first job after getting
yes.
that degree. Can we talk about sort of how that ended up happening?
Sure. I had a job at a different site as an intern, and it was also a remote private practice, and I definitely wanted to learn...
During grad school, you're saying?
During grad school, correct. Basically, your last year of grad school, or your last 3 semesters are your practicum and internship of where you're a student, but still working as a therapist, as an intern. So during that time, I was starting to look, and there was actually, we had a list of internship sites that you could apply to, and Northeast was on that list. And I think being a grad student, I was kind of, you know, they intimidate you a little bit about this internship, so you need to land one, of course. But I also had a set idea of when I wanted to finish the program. So I think I was a little bit quick to, once I got an internship interview and offer, grabbed it, and I wanted to go about it really thoughtfully, of course, as a job. And I actually had a colleague who was amazing and spoke so highly of this practice, and I can see why. So just from that, I was reaching out to different people, and I reached out to them. She even let them know that I was a friend of hers from PACE and got an interview. And the interview itself was amazing because some other interviews were maybe a phone call sharing a little bit about myself as a therapist or my background just thus far. And in this interview, I was really asked to share about some of my work. I was asked to share, you know, in a case example, what would you do with this type of client? So I had so much respect to be asked those questions, mm-hmm. and felt like I had to earn it, really, in that interview. Definitely almost, in a way, I don't want to say an audition, but I definitely felt like in that moment of, ooh, I really want to get this job. So I think just even seeing the care that they evaluate the therapists that work at that practice, I was so inspired by just how professional and what an amazing team they were. So I basically got the job in May of 2023, but I did not start until October 2023, which is also had, yes,
so
go ahead.
You had not interned there then?
No, different internship site, yes.
Got it. So that when you were hired here, this was at like your current status?
Yes, it was like, oh, I really, really hired from them and not even based on that internship experience, but which can happen. You can absolutely get a job at an internship site. And I was offered a job at my internship site, but I felt it was important to learn from different folks and have different experiences. So I got it before I was done with school. So I got it in May. I finished the program technically in August of 2023 and then started in October of last year.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great.
It's great to have something lined up like that.
Yeah, it was wonderful. Perfect timing.
All right. So great. Let's move on to the third part of the interview of three. And I'll preface the next question with there is no right or wrong answer.
Okay.
So these days, let's say that means 2024, what's your current relationship with dance and or other performing arts?
My current relationship with it, it's a little bit more distant than I want it to be. And I think that came out of just having to make so many changes to do this type of job. And I can make excuses about having little time, but I really am currently, like today, feeling longing to go back to class at least. I said that was something I was going to do when I was in grad school, and then I said it was something I was going to do when I stopped. So I have gone a number of times to take class in the city, and those have been such a special experience as opposed to let me just take a contemporary class. It felt like coming home. It felt really a special opportunity. I would just like to make that much more often. So I have not danced so much in the last year, but I would like it to be in my life, and I think I would like it to be something for myself. Just even movement. I think that's what I'm finding I really miss. I loved performing. I loved working with other dancers. But honestly, I think I just miss to move as opposed to demonstrate being a dancer or getting a job and working. The performative aspect I don't miss currently. I really miss just the physicality of dance and movement.
So you mentioned doing a few classes. Has that been this year or are you saying in prior years?
In prior years when I finished or when I started the grad school program, I had a dream of regularly going to class, and I did not do that. I would maybe go to a workshop or so, but if I finished grad school a year ago, I have gone since then, so I have made a point of if it was a guest choreographer that came into the city or a unique workshop, that's something that I think would was something that finally drew me to go, as opposed to maybe a weekly class, even though that seems much more accessible. So I have gone, but I do miss it in the sense of I want that to be something I connect to again, as opposed to I want to work like that again.
I understand.
Yeah.
Cool. I said, no right or wrong answer. And people go the whole spectrum there, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. I imagine. I understand all of it. I think I'm surprised maybe that I have had less of a relationship with it in recent years. But at the same time, I think maybe a pause in many ways was necessary. And now I genuinely miss it and love it, not in a way that I feel like I should be dancing. That's definitely a mentality that I think can happen when you get out of that I should be doing more or I shouldn't have stopped. I think now I just purely miss it and love it.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah.
So thinking about your current career in mental health counseling, and right, people have all sorts of different undergrad degrees, I'm sure. I'm sure you had classmates from many, many backgrounds. Probably no other dance majors in your graduating class. I could be wrong.
There actually was not. I was the only dance major, as I think of it.
All right. So in that sense, let's say your BOCO degree qualified you to do this, as would have many other degrees.
Yes.
Is there anything you feel your BOCO experience did particularly well to prepare you for your current career?
Mm. I do. I think many... many things. The first coming to mind in such a necessary way for grad school in general is the work ethic. I said I'm going to do this in 2 years, and knowing that it would not be easy, I was still working, the caseload was so much, so I definitely don't say that out of ego, more so the this is going to happen, this is how it needs to happen. So I think with BOCO, and I think the arts in general too, that commitment, that drive, and it's unwavering that this is what's going to happen. I'm willing to put the work in. And I think that's something that at BOCO you need. I imagine Berkeley, of course, that you cannot sustain, I think, a career in the arts if that's not an in full body commitment. So that absolutely is something that I think let me even just get through grad school to do this, to be able to prove to myself of, oh, okay, I can put this work in, I can handle the work to get to that finish line. And then when it comes to being a therapist in itself, the actual work that I'm doing, I think just the community aspect, as a dancer, an answer I find myself relaying often, if I ever talk about this, is really how to sit in space with people, which is funny because I'm remote, so I may not be in the same space as them. But I think being able to hold space, be comfortable in space, which is being a dancer. But I think at BOCO, one of my favorite things was improv. I absolutely loved improvisation, probably more than any other class or type of codified method. I just loved the spontaneity and being in the moment. And even though I have, it's almost as though ballet technique is theory. When it comes to psychology or mental counseling, there are theories that we use. There are evidence-based research treatments that we use. You have to know that to be able to then dive in and let it flow, essentially. So that's something that I think about almost every single day, that's my base, that's my structure, kind of like the ballet classes at BOCO. But then to be able to let all that go and be in the moment and be real with people, I think comes from the improvisation that I was taught by Olivier, who was amazing, and all of the faculty. So I think just the really empowering you to have a creative voice. I really don't believe any two dancers at BOCO were the same or similar. Everyone was so unique, and I think everyone had their own standing, or you could call to mind someone's name and picture how they dance specifically. So I think also that individuality let me feel confident and empowered to be in this space and be like, yeah, I was a dancer and now I'm a therapist. I feel like proud of that. And I think that comes from the experience that I had at BOCO and the people that I was with.
Terrific. Yeah. Let's turn that question around now.
Sure.
Because you got that performing arts degree, Bachelor of Fine Arts, I think?
Yes.
Yep, from BOCO. And, you know, you've done well for yourself. But all that said, when you look back at your BOCO education, is there anything where you say, you know, hey, it would have been really useful to have learned this while I was at BOCO, and they could have plausibly taught it to me, and they didn't?
Sure.
Anything missing or incomplete?
I think there are, I guess there's different ways I could approach that, so I don't even see it necessarily as, oh, I'm so upset I didn't learn this, but I think now at this point in my life too, even as an adult, I can consider different things that, oh, are so valuable, just even in terms of financial piece. I think especially for dancers, maybe people would disagree with that, but I think the dance profession needing financial literacy there about the types of jobs that are out there, or, you know, how to really sustain living in New York City, for example. I think that portion is so important, whether that would have been in a dance seminar class or something just maybe dedicated to that. And I think honestly from the beginning would be helpful. A lot of times I think those conversations came late in programs, which even in my grad school, that was true of things happening late in the semester, your last year, of things that you need to know. I think maybe early on having those conversations, things relate, now being a therapist, things related to body image, health and wellness. You know, I believe we absolutely had a nutrition class at the time, but I think even 2011 to 2015, nutrition and the emphasis on mental health and body image was such a different time compared to now. So I'd be curious to see just how that's spoken about and shared. And then in just more of, I guess, a technical sense, I was very lucky that with my degree and my classes, I was able to apply to my school. However, for mental health counseling in particular, there were some programs where you needed to have a background in, let's say, statistics or psychology. So, of course, maybe statistics wouldn't be something that was a part of our curriculum, but just as an example, that I also was able to get into a program where I didn't need those specific prereqs. If you did, of course, there's people that go on to take additional prereqs, but I was able to find a program where that was not necessary. But,
okay,
yeah.
I just want to state for the record,
yes,
that I'm a professor at Berkeley, and I teach statistics.
Really? Oh, that's amazing.
And, of course, now that the campuses have merged,
right?
I mean, I have had, I can count them on one hand, I think, but I have had BOCO students take statistics with me.
I am very happy to hear that. That's great. So then, okay, that's important to know then, because if anybody wanted to become a mental health counselor, then you have that credential. There's many schools in New York, I will say that, many schools in New York where that is considered a necessary prereq. So not all, sure, but that actually is really wonderful then.
Yeah, and of course, we also have a good number of psychology courses, which people can and do take.
That's perfect. I took a neuroscience in the arts class. I think that was my junior year of BOCO. And, oh, I'm forgetting the professor's name. She was amazing. But that was a phenomenal class. So I think even that was maybe a glimmer into this sort of thing, the intersection of the arts and psychology.
Awesome. So, you know, you say you kind of were dancing for a while, then your interest as far as your career started somewhat changing. And
yes.
Then let's say the pandemic was the kick in the butt, as it were.
Yes.
But, you know, you were evolving in that direction. Anyway,
absolutely.
Possibility. Some people, let's say, haven't completely found their path. And, I mean, it took you some number of years.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, other folks, you know, you might have people in their last year at Berkeley or BOCO just kind of wondering what comes next.
Mm.
So for either or both of those groups, what advice do you have?
Let's see. I think the advice that I don't think I led with this at the time, so this is definitely in retrospect, but I think working from a place of self-compassion and being on your own side will allow you to be able to move in a direction of what feels aligned with you. Because sometimes, let's say, for example, as a dancer, I can recall just a feeling of when you graduate, oh, I should book something now. I should have another job after this. There's a pressure. And maybe, of course, if you went to this amazing conservatory for dance or anything in the arts, you want that. You want that job. You want to be working. And at the same time, that also might be from a place of insecurity or comparison, or I should want this. And maybe there's actually a part of you that does not, or is feeling a little bit overwhelmed, or this isn't aligned anymore. So I think, as opposed to feeling shame about that many people might be experiencing, having self-compassion and saying, exploring that, allowing that to be the case. Maybe that means taking a moment to relax and breathe and think about how you want to feel in your life, how you want to be in the world, which maybe is a big open-ended consideration. But I think that will allow you to connect again to your joy or the things you want to do, which may be to perform forever, which may not be. And I actually did not think I was going to stop performing in a way such as that had happened. But it wasn't necessarily just a stop. It was an evolution, like you even said, Kevin, in my life, in myself as a person. So I think I would just give folks permission for that to change, for things to change. If that's your passion, if that's a job, a literal job or a field that you're in, I think welcome and embrace that change and what you need for yourself to be happy and fulfilled.
That's awesome. And I think I mentioned you're my 249th interview, I believe.
Yay!
I was just looking at the other BerkeleyAlumni.com site. There's one psychotherapist who does have a doctorate. There's one mental health counselor.
And I saw that.
Speech language pathologist.
So awesome.
If we cast a broad net, you're my fourth.
Yay!
who we could call some sort of therapist, right? So, so in other words, I don't think anyone's listening to all 249 interviews. But someone who's made it this far is thinking about some sort of counseling profession. So for someone who's listening with that in mind, someone who's not yet doing it and not yet in grad school, but is thinking about some sort of counseling role, what specific advice do you have for them?
I think someone considering this, it does have you really look in the mirror, which is so ironic that, you know, maybe you were a dancer or a performer, probably everyone in the program, you know, you're maybe in front of a mirror all day long with the performing arts. But with mental health counseling, I think it really also has you look at a lot of things in your life or you as a person or your thoughts about the future. So that can absolutely be something that can take some time to reflect on, or that in itself can be a big experience in itself, and that continues into this job. And I don't say that to be overwhelming, more so that you are the instrument, much like dance, music, theater, you are the instrument. Sometimes that can be working with your whole self, and it can be using all of yourself, and it is the most beautiful craft. It's such a wonderful exchange to be a person helping another person. And I think I just want to encourage that allowing and kind of that same idea, the self-compassion, but also allowing and welcoming. Maybe how long that takes for some folks, maybe grad school into working, ready to go. Maybe for some folks, you want to be there, but maybe that also brings a lot of things that we have to face or can bring its own challenges. So I don't say that to deter anyone, more so to allow that to be the case. That is absolutely a shared experience, I think, among any therapist or maybe any helping professions. And just being kind to yourself, being curious, and then connecting to, okay, but what is this about for me? What do I hope to gain out of this? Which is maybe just a job. Maybe for some people, just to see it as a job and a career is a great career. And maybe it's also a calling and a vocation, in a sense. So I say that to acknowledge that it's definitely takes your whole person to do this job, but it is an incredible way to work and be of service in life.
That's awesome. Well, hey, Christiana, I just have one last question for you.
Okay.
You have the mic. Is there anything we missed or anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, you know, I don't think so. I'm very grateful to have done this. I was so moved to be asked, and I thought recently that, you know, sometimes I think I can look forward a lot in life of where I want to go and what's next and what do I have to do in this next moment. And I'm really grateful that I was able to look back and ahead at the same time, being able to talk about this with Boco and in this community. I feel really honored to be included with these amazing alumni and also able to speak about these experiences, because I don't know if maybe I've had an opportunity to, in the capacity of the Boco community, to really say how much that shaped this for me. So I feel really grateful and happy to do that. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to acknowledge that for myself and for the program itself.
Oh, thank you. That's very gracious. And this is really interesting. And Loisanna, thank you so much, Christiana, for making the time here.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. This was so fun. I love talking about this, and I think it's an amazing work what you're compiling here. So thank you for doing this as well.
Thank you very much. Take care now.
Okay, you too. Bye.